over the weekend was Independent Bookstore Day. And it was a celebration of independent bookstores across the country. It was a huge event, and all of our local stores participated. And it was really wonderful to have that celebration. But I did think to myself, well, we celebrate it every Tuesday here on the Roundtable. Every Tuesday is Independent Bookstore Day. But certainly they had a lot more confetti for that event, and that is fine. We have two wonderful booksellers with us this morning. Phil Lewis is the owner of the Bennington Bookshop in Bennington, Vermont. Good morning, Phil. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Doug. Good morning, everybody.
Wonderful to have you here. Cheryl McKeon is with the Bookhouse in Albany. Good morning, Cheryl. How are you?
Good morning. Very well. Thrilled to be here.
Wonderful to have you as always. Cheryl, let us begin with you.
Okay. I'm going to begin with nonfiction. And every time I pick this up, I think I need somebody to talk to about this book. It's so beautiful. It is The Backyard Bird Chronicles, written and illustrated by novelist Amy Tan, with a foreword by David Allen Sibley. And Amy Tan lives in the Bay Area in California. Mm-hmm. She lives in Sausalito. And in 2016, she was despondent. She was despairing of all the hatred in the world, all the discord. And so she went to her back window and looked at her bird feeders. And eventually, this year, she published a 280-page book. It's a chronicle of her basically communing with birds. She claims that she made eye contact with every bird in this book. And it's a wonderful collection of short essays, facts about the birds, sandwiched with wonderful illustrations. She's been an illustrator since she was a little girl, chose the career of novelist, but has always enjoyed drawing.
Yes. I love her. I love her work, but that is a beautiful, beautiful book.
It really is, and it's so inviting. We were talking earlier. It's not a hardcover, and it's not a paperback. It's a flexible, firm cover with a lovely, smooth paper and with heavily illustrated with the birds. Very inviting.
Very similar to a bird book.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yeah, indeed, in the way that it is formatted, which is very cool. All right, Phil, you're up.
Okay, well, I'd like to start with a little bookshop story, if that's okay.
Yes.
I was speaking to a customer on the phone a couple of weeks ago, and we're going back and forth, name and address, and what's the book she wants, and what have you. And then it dawns on her, she says, you know, you sound just like one of those book reviewers on WAMC's Book Picks program. So I just had to laugh.
Yes, you were outed. That's good.
Yes, my secret's out. Okay, first up is The Bee Sting by Paul Murray. Has anybody read that?
I love this book. This is one of my favorite novels of last year, maybe one of my favorite novels ever.
Yeah,
it's a hugely inviting, Irishly depressing, wonderfully gripping novel.
Yeah, it's so cleverly done. I really enjoyed it. Anyway, meet the Barnes family, Dickie, Imelda, Cass, and PJ. Dickie owns a car dealership in a regional Irish town. It's been a successful business for years, but since the financial crash, sales are down and the business is threatened with closure. Imelda, Dickie's wife, wants him to approach his father, Maurice, for a loan. Maurice established the business, but has now retired and is living in Portugal. He returns to Ireland for a visit and discovers a hole in the accounts. Where has the money gone? Cass, Dickie and Imelda's teenage daughter, is in her final year of high school. She's mortified by her parents' situation and drowns her embarrassment in drink, putting at risk her one chance to escape the town by going off to college. And PJ? He just wants to run away. He's been in touch with an online friend in Dublin who has offered him a place to stay. He wonders one day why there are no pictures of his parents' wedding. Oh, his father tells him, that's on account of the bee sting. This is a very clever novel. Murray recounts certain events that have impacted the Barnes family from the perspective of each family member. There's an extra detail added here, a gap filled there. It's beautifully realised. Murray's writing is vivid and compelling. I sighed with satisfaction when I finished the book.
The Bee Sting, and it is by Paul Murray. I did interview Paul for the novel, and if you are interested, it was for the book show, and it's on that archive, and you can listen to the podcast, and it's at WAMC.org. All right, Cheryl.
I'm going to continue with nonfiction. Joe, I believe you interviewed Anne with this book?
I did. Yes, twice, actually. I love her.
I love her, too. Her fans love her.
Yes.
Yes, there's no doubt about that. This is her 20th book, entitled Somehow, Thoughts on Love. And like Amy Tan, she wrote this book in part because she was responding to the reality of our world, our current world. And she writes, "Our love and compassion up to the stark realities we face?" She responds to her own question, "Maybe, I think so, somehow." Thus the title, Somehow, Thoughts on Love. For those who do love Anne Lamott, and even for those who maybe haven't read her before, this book just cries out for post-it arrows on almost every other page. As she always does, she has so many perspectives on how to be positive in the world. Her optimism and her wit are on every page. As I said, it's her 20th book, and they are all formatted the same. It's maybe 4x8. They're uniquely formatted, but what a wonderful collection on your shelf.
Actually, you have a lot of the backlist at your store. I was so excited to see. I was like, oh, maybe I can find a first edition, but they're up to like 40 or something. But it was great. I liked that they were all there. It's a lovely, lovely volume. Yeah. And also, she obviously, she just turned 70, mm-hmm. and there's some reflection in here. But it also, as you read all of them, it furthers her story. You
Indeed.
Learn more about her in a memoir sense, which is lovely as well.
Yeah, Linda is a huge fan. That's why we have so many of her books in the store.
Really good stuff. All right, Phil.
Okay,
number two.
Next up is Something to Hide by Elizabeth George. We just read this in our Whodunit book club, which is the book club attached to the bookshop in Bennington. Everyone rated it very highly, 9 out of 10, 9.5, even 1/10. So I thought I'd share it with the listeners. But a warning, the book features the practice of female genital mutilation, or FGM. There are no graphic descriptions, but the threat looms in the background. Most of the book club members are women, all but me, in fact, and while they all agreed the practice is abhorrent, they felt George's portrayal was valuable and the book well worth reading despite this background. This is an intelligent and thoughtful mystery. George's regular protagonist, Linley, is there again, this time as acting detective superintendent. Sergeant Barbara Havers is there too. But there is a host of other characters. George has done a wonderful job of giving them depth and individuality. The first part of the book introduces these disparate characters and their seemingly unconnected backgrounds. How can she possibly weave these threads together, we wondered in the book group. But she does, while throwing in plenty of plausible red herrings along the way to keep the reader guessing. The book has just about everything. A murder, an affair, envy and jealousy, greed, desperation and anger, hope and love. Given the topic, and at nearly 700 pages, it's not a light read by any means. But if you like mysteries, this is a good one.
Elizabeth George is a wonderful author. The new book is Something to Hide. All right, Cheryl.
Another nonfiction. This one is Monsters, A Fan's Dilemma. It has kind of an unforgettable cover. It's two women rendered in red and black. It's a photo that's been doctored. And one of them has her hand over her eyes. The other one has her hand to her chest. They're obviously horrified. And the reason they're horrified is they're thinking about the question, can we love the art and loathe the artist? Claire is an essayist. She's based in Seattle. This just came to paperback, which is why I'm bringing it. It became a paperback released last week. She asks the questions and she doesn't give the answers, but she invites us to think about this. Pablo Picasso, Woody Allen, Hemingway, some women as well, J.K. Rowling, and her recent views on transgender people. Virginia Woolf was an anti-Semite in her writing. Willa Cather has been viewed as a racist in some of her writing. How do we rectify enjoying their art and supporting them as artists and still recognize that they were not really the best human beings whom we would want to edify? So it's very thoughtful. It's somewhat autobiographical. She talks about how she feels about these things, conversations she's had with others about these artists, and it does really give us a lot to think about.
Monsters by Claire Dederer. Am I saying that right?
Mm-hmm.
Dederer.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Phil.
Okay. I know you've done this one before, Joe, but I've brought it up again. Northwoods by Daniel Mason. I really enjoyed Daniel Mason's earlier novels, The Piano Tuner and The Winter Soldier, so I was very much looking forward to his latest novel, Northwoods. It does not disappoint. There's a richness and depth to Mason's writing. This, along with a twist of cheeky humor, makes for a very satisfying read. The main character is an old house, painted yellow, that sits beside an apple orchard in the hills of western Massachusetts. The house is, at times, occupied, at other times abandoned. It's had repairs and extensions. Over the span of more than 200 years, it's had a range of inhabitants, and, being an old house in New England, it has its ghosts. These remain mostly invisible, but reveal themselves sometimes to certain chosen inhabitants, usually to lend a helping hand or to prompt a decision. Charles Osgood, with his daughters, Mary and Alice, settles there when he discovers an apple tree growing in the woods that has the most delicious apples he's ever tasted. Osgood's Wonder, he decides to name the variety. He propagates an orchard and his apples become the pick of New England. Mary and Alice continue to live on at the house after their father dies. There's love between them, but also bitterness and envy. They leave songs behind which are scattered throughout the novel, and a notable scene when Mary intervenes to save the house's latest inhabitant from capture. And the ending, well, I think the ending's just lovely.
It is Northwoods by Daniel Mason. It's published by Random House, and yes, a book that is still resonating with so many folks. Cheryl.
I'm moving to fiction. Last week, Ruth Reichel published a novel, The Paris Novel. We know Ruth Reichel and really love her. Everyone does, I think. It's safe to say she's written 5 memoirs. She was the editor of Gourmet magazine. She's maybe best known as the restaurant critic of the New York Times, who would dress in disguises and in order to fairly review restaurants in New York. The Paris Novel is truly a Paris novel. When I finished it, I wasn't sure I was really going to embrace it because there are a lot of French words and phrases in it, and I'm neither a Francophile nor at all fluent in French. And I think that would probably, for some of us, be best enjoyed as a Libro FM, because the reader,
yes.
I did listen to it in part. I read it and I listened to it both. And the Libro FM reader is wonderful, and she was able to communicate the meaning of the French words. That said, however, there's so much more to it. It's the story of a young woman in 1980s New York City. Her name is Stella. She was raised by a negligent mother who was quite well known in the social circles of New York, but really didn't want to have anything to do with her daughter. When she passes away, she leaves a small inheritance, and Stella is informed that her mother left her money only to be used for a ticket to Paris. So Stella, on the advice of her lawyer, says, the money's good right now. Get yourself to Paris. Nobody knows why. And when Stella gets to Paris, she continues her life of introspection and loneliness and not really reaching out to experiences until one day she visits a dress shop, and the proprietor of the shop says, you must wear this gown. It was made for you. Take it. Don't pay for it. It was a $5,000 gown. It was very expensive. Don't pay for it. Go to this restaurant and see what happens. And she does. And it isn't a setup, as we come to learn, but she meets an elderly, lovely art expert, gentleman, very, very wealthy. And he strikes up a conversation. It doesn't feel at all threatening. And he starts to guide her towards the experience that will become the defining experience of her life in Paris. It's chock full of recipes, as one would expect. If you're not a carnivore, just be advised. Ruth is. And the recipes, the food, the art, it is absolutely delightful. I would recommend it to anybody to take on a flight or to sit on the deck for a weekend and immerse yourself in Paris.
She's such a wonderful writer, both fiction and nonfiction. Ruth Reichel's new novel, The Paris Novel, which is published by Random House. All right, Phil.
Next up is Shanghai by Joseph Cannon. This is a sneak preview. Shanghai is released in June. It's worth the wait. It's a gripping novel. It reminded me of Graham Greene's The Quiet American, though I don't know how that's possible. It's 50 years since I read The Quiet American, and I don't remember much about it, except a brooding sense of rivalry, conflict, and tension against the background of war. Shanghai has all of these in spades. It's the late 1930s, Europe. Jewish lives are being threatened, their property confiscated. Stolen might be a better word. People are desperate to get out, but without paperwork, there's nowhere to go. Shanghai, a European commercial enclave on the coast of China, is still open, still accepting refugees. And a last boat is leaving from Trieste. Daniel has a ticket, paid for by his uncle Nathan, a gangster with a gambling operation in Shanghai. He boards at the last minute, helping a couple of other refugees, Leah and her mother, with their baggage. Once settled on the boat, they meet again at dinner at a table set aside for non-Aryan passengers. And this is where they meet Yamada, who works for the Japanese secret police and is stationed in Shanghai. Daniel and Leah spend the three-week voyage in a passionate affair that lasts until the ship docks in Shanghai. There, they go their separate ways. Nathan sets Daniel up in his gambling operation, and they work to open a new and exclusive casino on the outskirts of the European enclave. Yamada arrives for the opening night, with Leah on his arms. Shots are fired, and Nathan is injured. Nobody is sure who was the intended target, or who ordered the attack. Violence simmers between rival groups, the Europeans, the Chinese gangs, and the looming presence of the Japanese military, a continual threat. As the world slips towards war, Daniel and Leah try to escape once more. This is a masterful thriller of a book. I really enjoyed it. Anybody else read it?
It's next on my list, on my stack.
Shanghai. Mm-hmm. It is Shanghai by Joseph Cannon. I am a Joseph Cannon fan. I sometimes forget to read him, but good stuff. All right.
I brought an older book, a 1997 memoir by Doris Kearns Goodwin. Everyone is completely delighted with An Unfinished Love Story, her recent memoir, Doris Kearns Goodwin's story about decades of history as seen through her husband's eyes. She and her husband went through his papers, and she has written them up and included their personal story. But the one I brought is Wait Till Next Year. And it is another memoir set in 1950s Long Island. It's the story of her love for her family and the passion she shared for the Brooklyn Dodgers with her father. Mm. And it's definitely a period piece. It's, you don't have to be a Dodgers fan or even a baseball fan. I think this might be the only baseball book I have ever read. And I recommend it to everybody who wants to read a good family memoir, might have some interest in the Brooklyn Dodgers, but anybody who appreciates Doris Kearns Goodwin's wonderful writing. She has said that when she meets people, they often want to know about the Dodgers before they ask about the Johnsons, the Roosevelts, or the Kennedys, her other areas of expertise. It's a delightful memoir. Wait Till Next Year.
I haven't read it in a long time. I read it when it first came out, but I should read it again. It's so wonderful. Doris Kearns Goodwin, Wait Till Next Year. Phil.
Last one for me is Burnham Wood by Eleanor Catton. It's another thriller, this one with an environment versus big business angle. Burnham Wood is the name of an environmental group that invades neglected land and plants crops there, which the group harvests and distributes to the needy. The group becomes aware of an abandoned farm on the edge of Korowai National Park in New Zealand. They decide to occupy the farm, only to discover that it's being bought by an American billionaire, Robert Lemoyne. Lemoyne intends to build an underground bunker on the farm, or so he says. In reality, this is just a front for an illegal mining operation in the national park. Lemoyne offers to fund the group, believing their work will provide further cover for his illegal mine. Meanwhile, Tony, an investigative journalist and former member of the group, has got wind of the activity in the park and has photographs which he endeavours to get out to the mainstream news outlets. A drug-fueled accident late at night results in the death of the farm's owner. Lemoyne steps up to fix the problem, stirring up past rivalries and resentments within Burnham Wood. This is a compelling read. It's dark and foreboding, but thrilling too. The reader's left hoping Tony gets his message out. I do too.
Eleanor Catton is the author. Picador is the publisher. It's just out in paperback. Burnham Wood is the name of the novel. All right.
And my last book is Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club. It is a novel firmly set in the Midwest, J. Ryan Stradall. And I think of him as Fanny Flagg having moved to Minnesota. It is the third in his series. They're not related. But the first was Kitchens of the Great Midwest. The second was The Lager Queens of Minnesota.
Yep.
And this one is Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club. It's the story of two families, two restaurant families, very different restaurants they own. And the couple who comes together, both from those two families, and have a restaurant in Bear Jaw Lake, Minnesota. They're trying to make a go of it. They're serving blackberry pie, Betty's lemonade, prime rib platters with complimentary cheese curds. And
nice.
Along with all the food stories, there are some lovely and poignant stories of family relationships.
Excellent. That sounds really fun. The name of the book is Saturday Night at the Lakeside Supper Club. I love Fanny Flagg's novels. They're so much fun. I hope there is one coming soon. Is there anything anyone else? We have a moment or two. Is there anything else anyone would like to mention or that's coming up at the store or something that we should be aware of?
We were talking about the new column Toybin earlier.
Yes.
We're all looking forward to that.
Oh, that's right. It's called Long Island.
Yes.
And I'm about a quarter of the way through it. And it is a sequel to Brooklyn, which was not only a hit movie with Saoirse Ronan, but also a novel that Colm ta Beaton wrote 20 years ago, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
this is telling us what happened, bringing those characters 20 years later into the mid 70s. I think. Mm-hmm. Have you read it?
Yes, but we won't tell you.
Yeah, okay. Well, I love it. I love him.
I mean, we won't tell you what happens.
Yes, yeah. But it's good.
Oh, it's fabulous.
And despite the name of the book, it's mostly set in Ireland.
Yes, a lot in Ireland, which that's good, too. that's why I love it so much. Yes, I can't wait to finish it. It's I've greatly been enjoying it. Long Island is the name of that new book. That comes out next Tuesday, which I believe is May the 7th.
Yeah.
So all kinds of good stuff. All right, here's the information you need to know. If you want to see the book list on our website, all you have to do is go to wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable, and look at book picks, and you can see the book picks for this week and in past weeks. And if there's that book, it has something about Paris and the woods, maybe Shanghai, I don't know, which one, and then you can go and try to figure it out, and that's much, much easier. Or you can bother the booksellers. That's Phil Lewis at the Bennington Bookshop, and their online presence is at BenningtonBookshop.com, and Cheryl McKeon from the Bookhouse in Albany, BHNY.com, BHNY.com. And again, all of our book lists posted online at wamc.org. You're listening. I thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
It's a great pleasure to have you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.